Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. Today, I welcome to the conversation head of the CIO team at Envision, where he provides regular market updates and investment advice and strategies for clients. His name is Jacob Du, Chief Investment Officer for Envision Wealth Management, joining me to make sense of what is moving markets today. Jacob, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay. Thank you very much for having me today.
Enjoying working from home?
I'm actually working from office.
Oh, you are. You're essential, huh?
Yes.
All right, Jacob. Let's get going with Money and Me. Welcome to the show. You know, many say it's a false assumption that history can provide a playbook for how to deal with the market turmoil that we are experiencing today. I mean, in an effort to get a handle on the economic and financial consequences of the pandemic, our first instinct, of course, is to look for precedents and remedies in earlier crises. But some, like Stephen Roach, who sits on the faculty of Yale, say that pointing to the 2008 global financial crisis as the most relevant example is a mistake, and that what worked 11 years ago won't work today, and that, in fact, the COVID-19 pandemic is the mirror image of the global financial crisis. What do you think?
Well, I do not agree with that, because every crisis itself is going to be very different. Now, back in 2008 itself, it started off as a global financial crisis. And the problem actually started with a complete disregard on the credit quality of the borrowers and the subsequent repackaging of this risk and being sold to investors. This time, it's a health crisis. And that itself has blown up and dragged down the financial system and the broader economy. As you can see, the impact itself is actually much wider and broader than we have seen back in 2008. In 2008, we don't have lockdown. We do not have, you know, companies and even the restaurants having to shut down. But now we are seeing all that, and we have no end in sight. We don't even know exactly when when this will be lifted. Even if it's lifted, will our life, you know, go back to the original days before this entire thing first started? So with no vaccine in sight, our recovery is going to be dictated by the response to the spread of the virus itself. So currently what I'm seeing is that in terms of the response from the central banks and the governments themselves, the measures may not necessarily be enough.
Right, but they were required, right? These extraordinary monetary policy actions announced by central banks around the world.
Yes, it's definitely required. But the concern I have is this. The central banks and even the governments around the world, especially in the Western economies like in Europe and US, now increasingly the measures they have taken on right now, they have actually come into the market to provide a credit backstop for a lot of risky assets. Now, in the short term wise, it will provide a temporary relief. But over the longer term, the question is, who's going to fund all this debt?
Yes.
At some stage, something's got to give. Because, you see, if you look at it, right now, U.S., in 2008, they only started with QE, right? When certain limit being put in place. Now, it becomes unlimited. That's a concern. Then they even went further of saying that they will buy mortgage-backed securities, collateralized loan obligations, and even high-yield bonds with BB rating.
Yep.
So the balance sheet itself, you can see, has blown up from $2 trillion in 2008 now to $6.6 trillion on the Federal Reserve. And the U.S. government itself is on $19.3 trillion. And with Japan itself, right now, this morning, the BOJ is even discussing about having an unlimited QE. And European side have been beginning to show signs that they're looking to buy back their debts. And New Zealand's government is also buying about 27% of their own debt. Now, that itself, to me, is a worrying trend, because then how would these governments themselves be able to finance? Are they going to write it off once and for all, or are they going to issue more bonds, or are they going to just print more money?
All this
alternative doesn't seem to make any sense at all.
I want to pick up on that, because given the bank's balance sheets that you just mentioned, right, and these extraordinary QE measures, just recently Steve Eisman, who was, you know, part of that whole Big Short movie, which was based on reality, right, the people who were able to see what was happening in the financial crisis in 2008 and actually profit from it. He betted against the subprime mortgage securities during the financial crisis, Steve Eisman. So he now says that he's really bullish on banking stocks because of massive deregulation. What do you think?
Well, he's bullish on the banking stock simply because, you know, what's that lose for the banks, right? At the end of the day, if you were to have a lot of risky assets on your books and you have got the, you know, Federal Reserve or you have the central bank behind you, the worst case scenario is that you just sell them directly back to the Feds. So, I mean, the downside risk is being, you know, is being covered by the Federal Reserve. So I only have the upside. So therefore, I'm going to be very bullish. If I'm going to be a trader, if I'm going to be an investor, I will do the same trade as well. I will take the same position. But like I said, I mean, that's the short-term basis, which means that over the next 12 months or maybe into next year itself, yes, I can take such a bet. But over the longer term, you know, it's anybody's guess at how the government is going to manage the entire explosion in the debt exposure.
I'm speaking with Jacob Du, Chief Investment Officer at Envision Wealth Management Investors. All right, we want to look for the challenges and opportunities in our current landscape. Singapore Exchange saying its profits jumped 38% in the third quarter of its financial year. These numbers just out before the markets opened this morning, Jacob. So in terms of opportunities, I mean, I could do a whole show on what's driving SGX profits, and you're welcome to weigh in there. But where are the opportunities as you see it?
Well, SGX primarily for revenue is coming from the derivative business itself. It's not coming directly from the stock purchases or stock transactions. So with the current environment where you have got a greater activity in the derivative market itself, short-term-wise, yes, the revenue seems to be to increase. And, you know, if a guy, anyone who looked at SGX, they probably be buying the stocks because of dividend yield. Now, in terms of the challenges, in terms of opportunities itself, I would say that for the entire investment landscape, I would say that there's a lot of opportunities available right now, simply because in every crisis, even current one, we are seeing a couple of dislocations happening in the market, especially in the fixed income and equity space. So investors, I would say, should actually learn how to take the advantage of the anomaly that exists during this period of time, because such dislocation only exists for a very short period of time. And at best, it's going to be like 3 months. Right. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be gone. But the thing they need to be aware of is that in terms of liquidity, the issue we are seeing is that the liquidity right now in the market is not as great as before. Most of the great hedge fund managers themselves have already been hit, and there's a huge outflow of at least $40 billion from hedge funds. So that in itself speaks a lot about what investors generally tend to think of hedge fund managers. On the fixed income side, only the popular names will see the bit of a spread that's actually tighter. But on the other names, especially in Sing dollar denominated papers, the bit of a spread is pretty wide at this point in time. In fact, yesterday when we first checked on one of the Fraser Center Point perpetual itself, the bit of a spread that's been quoted by the interbank market is approximately like 10 points away. I'm like, wow, okay, 85.95. So that's huge. Right, so it doesn't make any sense when you have got something like that. But then, for any investor who like to look for certain dislocations, do not just look at a fixed to one certain asset class. You should be looking across different asset class, because when you combine the two of them together, you'll actually be able to extract the value and get a higher return on the back of that.
Can you give us an example of looking across asset classes?
For example, for a client who actually has a US dollars, investment portfolio. And looking for at least a 6% yield for at least an investment grade or perhaps like a triple B rated name itself, what they can look for is that for a short duration of maturity in 2024, they could actually look to buy a euro denominated issue by a triple B bank name and make use of the FX forwards, because the FX forwards currently is giving you a yield of approximately 4%. So with a yield coming from the 2024 paper, that it's like giving you approximately 3% and a 4% from the FX side, effectively your client, after hedging, you know, up to maturity, the client is going to get approximately 4% to 5%. But after leverage, you'll get 6% to 7%. So in that sense, you're buying at a discount on the issue, you're taking advantage of the FX forwards, and you're getting a relatively good yield, and you know, it's good enough to pay off for all your cost of funds.
makes sense. Now, let's look at the road to recovery. You know, investors want to look for the dislocations, and they're also, you know, there's a lot of different theories. Is it going to be U-shaped? Is it going to be V-shaped? So when you look at markets and businesses bouncing back from this crisis, I mean, there's broad consensus that the best way to restart the global growth engine is flattening the COVID-19 infection curve, both in individuals, countries, and worldwide as well. What are you looking for in terms of what needs to happen so that markets and businesses can bounce back?
Well, I will break it up in two parts, because if you look at the financial markets, now the financial markets tends to behave way ahead than what the main street may behave, right? Mm-hmm. So in terms of recovery, I will still say that in the financial markets, we'll be expecting a W-shape. Now, why the W-shape is because after the big down move where we've seen last month, you see the bounce back this month itself. The fact is that the fundamentals has not changed. So which means going forward, if it's look for the earnings results, it's going to look bad across every sector. So which means that there's the likelihood that, you know, there's a possibility that asset prices may come down again, especially stock prices, right? So but after that, will we test the lows? Yes, we may, but then would anyone get in? The psychology of the investor tends to be very different. When it comes down, everybody thinks that perhaps it will get a better level to get in.
Right.
But when it goes up, they say, I'll miss the boat. So it's very difficult. So what I'm trying to say is that investors should pick the levels and think, is that, okay, do I want to do this a long-term? If I'm going to be a long-term investor, when it comes to my level, that's when I'm going to get in. Right. So it's difficult to pick a bottom from here. So I would say the financial markets will have, you know, up and down. The volatility will still continue, but will not be as high as what we've seen back in March. Now, as for the main street, I would say it's going to be a long U-shape. It's not going to be a V-shape at all. I mean, with all these talks, some of the participants in market itself saying there's a V-shape, it's unlikely to be. Because currently, right now, look at exactly what's happening in China. Even though the number of cases have come down, when they have gradually opened up Wuhan, you have not seen activity coming back to before the entire crisis. There's still social distancing. There are still restrictions in place because at the end of the day, a vaccine has not been found. So it's going to be a gradual recovery from here. Now, with a lot of people right now around the world losing their jobs, it's going to be difficult for anyone to think about buying any big ticket items. So it's very unlikely that for them to, you know, big spender, or, you know, they will just keep it, try to save it, and you know, just live day by day with the whatever food and services that you want to get.
Mm-hmm. So we saw a rebound in crude prices after an oil futures contract traded below zero for the first time in history earlier this week, -$37 a barrel. When it comes to your expectations for markets to rebound, what are some signals that you're looking out for? And also on the story of oil, I want to ask you, what do you think? Goldman Sachs has said that oil is set for violent rebalancing. What do you think?
Well, Goldman Sachs, you have a tendency to speak from position itself. Well, my take is this. Now, the current WTI, the reason why it went all the way down is because there are two things. One is there's an oversupply. Second, there's a lack of storage. Now, until these two factors has been resolved, you're going to see that oil prices is going to have a technical rebound that what we've seen recently, but the situation will not resolve itself, because until those two factors has been you know, resolved itself, the fact is that the WTI will probably behave the same way, which means that when it comes back to the maturity again, we may likely see there's a continual rollover and the WTI oil prices will come down again. So if a client would look at, say, you know, what ETF they could enter, because, you know, they may think that getting in at these levels now that oil price has come down to practically zero, you know, what's the best way to enter the market to take advantage of such low prices, and hopefully they will go up. My suggestion is that the investors should pay a lot of attention to the construct of the ETF. Right? So if they do not understand the construct, even if you get an ETF, you'll be frustrated with the fact that if the underlying has performed and yet your ETF has not performed, you'll be wondering as to what happened, why. So that's where the problem lies. And currently what's happening is that everyone, retail investors have gone into USO big time. Right, last week we have seen a 1.5 billion inflow into USO. This week we have seen approximately another 1.5 billion of orders wanting to get into USO.
Mm.
The issue is that the USO previously was constructed in such a way where 40% was invested in the front month contract and 55% in the second month contract, with only 5% in the third month contract.
Yeah.
So it's heavily skewed towards a near month contract where, you know, where it's down, you get hit big time. Now, because of the down move, it has caused a very huge or a steep contango.
Yeah.
And because of the steep contango, the investor will not realize that when they need to roll over each month's contract, the cost that they pay is going to practically wipe out the gains that they have. So take, for example, the ETF actually, when it went down recently and it rebounds back by 15%, your USO has hardly moved. It has only moved up by only 4%.
Mm.
So you can see the tracking error is actually huge. So, and the worst part is that this morning, it has been stated, USO have already stated that they will not disclose exactly how are they going to recalibrate the construct of their ETF. So that in itself gives professionals like us even greater difficulty in analyzing how closely is this ETF tracking the WTI.
Wow. Okay, because we know that USO made changes to its holdings recently. It's going to hold 40% of its portfolio in June, expiry futures, 55% in July, 5% in August. So a little bit more breathing space. Do you think then for investors looking to get in on this cheap oil, that they should expect underperformance of the USO ETF, but there is perhaps hope ahead?
Well, I would say that there are several factors at play here. So which means if understanding the construct is one part. The second thing is that they need to look at where the forward curve lies.
Mm.
If the forward curve right now in steep contango, it will actually eat into the gains that you see on the WTI performance in our spot. So what they need to do is make sure that if, let's say, the steep contango starts to flatten and gradually move back towards a backwardation, that's when the investors should take advantage and move and buy into the USO. And you'll see your gain moving much better and the tracking error will be much reduced tremendously.
People are very optimistic about oil ETFs. Is it sound to toe the line of not speculating with oil ETFs?
No, I wouldn't say it's not sound, but I would say that because you're trying to get into the commodity markets, there's not many avenues. It's unlike stock market, it's like fixed income market.
Mm.
So getting into the commodities market, you only have either a choice of getting into the futures contract, because no clients will get into the physical market,
right.
Because, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't
storage.
Make any sense for anyone to take delivery, right, to storage and everything else in insurance, right? So, therefore, the only other avenue they can get into is through the ETF. And through the ETF, that's when, you know, my advice is that, you know, look at exactly where, how the entire ETF is going what's the composition of the ETF itself, and also what will be the curve, the forward curve like.
That's great insight. Now, what expectations do you have for consumer sentiments moving ahead?
Well, I think that the consumer sentiment is going to be pretty cautious going forward. Everyone's looking exactly at how governments around the world are actually controlling the spread of the virus. Obviously, economic activity cannot remain the way it is because at some stage, something is going to break, which means whether it's going to be psychological impact on everyone. And you know whether it's going to be able to regain their livelihood. The issue is more about how consumers generally right now, given the measures that's in place, how are they going to adapt to the new style of working? As you can see right now, things are very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get anything done, whether it's going to be delivery, whether it's going to be even to have a discussion, a conference call, a lot of human interactions is now being sidelined. And in the wealth management business and even in the industry itself, a lot of times it's always good to have a face-to-face meeting because then it's when a lot of things can be established and a better confidence and collaboration can be actually effected on that. So going forward, I would say that consumer sentiment on an overall basis will continue to be slow, primarily because everyone will just be looking at buying the basic necessities. No one would be looking to buy anything that's a high big ticket items, anything that's exorbitant. So, which means that on the longer term, if this thing stretches on to for 6 months, we'll be looking at, you know, the economic figures, the GDP figures around the world to be pretty ugly.
I'm speaking with Jacob Du, Chief Investment Officer for Envision Wealth Management. This is Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Jacob, what is on your stocks to watch list?
Well, on my watch list of some, I'm kind of looking at DBS, because then at the end of the day, I would expect that with the recovery, if it's going to happen, DBS stocks definitely will be moving higher from here. But currently at this top price level, it's not my target. So I'm waiting for it to reach approximately around $16, $17. For ST Engineering, right now, what they are doing is that they're actually producing masks and producing some of the PPEs. Mm-hmm. But going forward, on the longer term, they're actually involved in the 5G networks for Singapore. And that itself, to me, is a bright future. So given what's happening right now in COVID-19, I think the technology that they're actually involved in is going to really help Singapore in a very big way. Now, so that's more towards where my stock this is. But for dividend play, I would say that, yes, for the REITs, I will still continue to play with REITs because of the dividend yield, SGX, Venture Cap, Bukit Sembawang, Guacolan, and Singtel.
All right, this morning we were talking about the disappointment with Gilead Sciences and, you know, the testing of Remdesivir. Jury's still out in terms of effectiveness. Biolytics, which is a diagnostic company, was the second most traded stock on Wednesday, and there's talk about who they're going to use to distribute their COVID-19 test kits in the U.S. What do you make of healthcare stocks? What do you make of this sector?
Well, healthcare stocks, if you were to look at around the world on the healthcare stocks, there are two parts to it, right? So if you look at the healthcare providers, primarily in the hospitality types of healthcare companies, or to where the entire building itself is rented out to to individual units. Now, that itself, I would say, is a struggle, simply because the elective surgery have not all been postponed. So you're only focusing on dealing with COVID-19 patients, and that is not revenue generated for most of these healthcare companies that's involved in it. Mm-hmm. Even in Singapore context itself, you look at IHH, they are primarily relying a lot of revenue on elective surgeries, which is not happening. Then on the other side, you have got a pathway where basically they're relying on the doctors, the individual units who are actually paying the rentals. Now, that will continue to have a regular rental stream, but you're not going to expect outperformance in that, because you're not going to get anyone who's willing to pay higher rent given the current situation. Now, therefore, the next thing is you look at pharmaceuticals. Now, the pharmaceuticals, everyone is now racing to come up with the next vaccine.
Yep.
In the recent weeks, we have seen quite a lot of private equity fund managers approaching us and asking us to help them to invest in these companies where they are trying to develop the next vaccine. Now, so there were a lot of theories, a lot of different types, but the race is still towards where's the end goal. Now, my point is that even with these companies developing the vaccine itself, the distribution will be an issue, because I don't think any government around the world have decided exactly how are they going to distribute the vaccine eventually. Mm. It's always about profit-making for some of these companies. And the governments I've not seen anyone coming together to discuss about how are they going to share this information, share the vaccine for humanity's sake. Therefore, my point is that, yes, short-term-wise, if any pharmaceutical firms come out with an actual vaccine, the stock price will definitely go up. But over the longer term, right, the investors would need to come to a stand and decide, now, do we want to push this company to have a social responsibility in that sense?
Healthcare ETFs have been hot, I hear, given, what we're looking at.
Yeah. So, but if, again, like I said, the healthcare ETF itself is a construct that goes inside. I mean, you can have called, you look at the likes of Eli Lilly, if you look at, say, Novartis and all stuff, right? So all these big companies, although they're saying that they're doing certain parts of the entire process or trying to come up with the next solution, yes, right now what the world needs is a lot of test kits.
Yes.
But at the same time, we know for sure the vaccine is not going to be ready until at least 12 months later.
With all the testing,
Yeah, so until such time when we actually have the vaccine, I would say that in the meantime, how much can the company really earn from all these additional test kits that they're generating?
Good point. Good point. Well, great talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us here on Money and Me. Wonderful insights for our investor listeners. Jacob Du is Chief Investment Officer for Envision Wealth Management. You have a good Friday, Jacob.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.